Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today we review the two major races of the weekend, the Monaco GP and, of course, the Indy 500. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Vogel. Hello everyone to episode 39 of the Fastest Lab podcast. So we had two major races this weekend, arguably one very exciting and one rather boring. So should we start with the boring one, Fergal?
Well, I don't know about you, but I thought both races were very exciting. I think I'm the only one that thinks that, yeah. Let's start.
Well, you must be talking about the last 20 laps of the arguably boring one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's probably best to start with the Monaco GP. It was I thought it was overall a pretty, well, an exciting race. Maybe not the first portion of the race, but after that, I think I was pretty excited by it.
Yeah, I mean, from the start, we knew with the wide cars, it's going to be very difficult to overtake in Monaco. Not that it was easy the last few years, but we knew wider cars, arguably more dependent on downforce, it would be difficult. And yeah, the start was quite okay. I mean, we had no major incidents, no crash, so everybody got through okay. And yeah, both Ferraris, of course, 1 and 2. And yeah, after that, not much was happening. I mean, some eyes were on Lewis Hamilton, of course, with a poor qualifying, qualifying P13. And yeah, not much going on there, was there?
No, there wasn't really much happening. I mean, Raikkonen, of course, on the Saturday in qualifying, did a great lap and great effort to secure his first pole position in like 9 years. Great effort by him, but at the start there wasn't really much happening at all, and it wasn't the most exciting first 30 or so laps to the race. But I mean, I'm actually quite surprised with the reaction that the race got. I mean, it's as if people expected it to be a great race. I going into it, I knew that there was going to be, well, I was going to be surprised if there was any overtakes. So for me, perhaps that anticipation of the fact that there was going to be no overtakes helped. And it was like what I said last time out in the last episode, how you don't get good racing around Monaco, but you get good races. And I think eventually it did turn into a good race. But yeah, definitely the first 30 laps wasn't really much happening. I mean, at the end of the first lap, Jenson Button and Pascal Wehrlein pitted, and they were down at the back, which would, we'll talk about that later, how that ended up. And then Raikkonen and Vettel looked pretty comfortable out in front. It was actually quite surprising to see how much they could pull away from Bottas in that early stage.
Yeah, that first lap, that was incredible. Like, just went off into the distance.
Yeah, I think the real guesswork there is that the tyres, the ultrasoft tyres, were the problem for Mercedes. And so far this season, there's been reports that Mercedes, the softer the tyre, the more Mercedes struggle to get it up to temperature and get it into a good operating window. And perhaps, Monaco was an example of that, not only in the race, but also in qualifying. We've seen how much Lewis was struggling with the car. I mean, he was in the drop zone at the end of Q2, and he probably would have got into Q3 with his final lap, but unfortunately for him, the Van Dorn crashed and he couldn't improve. But even he said himself that if he got into Q3, he wouldn't have been near pole position. He probably would have gotten 6th or 7th. So Ferrari did well in qualifying compared to Mercedes, and it does look like they can work those ultrasoft tires a lot better.
Yes, seems like it. And after the first half of the race, when did the top guys p pit. I mean, the first of the top guys that pitted was Verstappen, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, they tried to get some kind of undercut on Bottas, but Bottas reacted immediately after that. Did not work out. Verstappen wasn't pretty happy about that. I mean, it was from the beginning, it was a question, will the undercut work or is the overcut better? I mean, we got kind of an answer later on when Ferrari tried their strategy with Kimi, and Vettel went on and put some really, really fast laps in, like 15.5, 15.2. I was watching the timing monitor and I was just like, wow, where did he find those tenths? I mean, that was really quick pace there from Vettel. And actually, before that, before we come to the Ferrari strategy, maybe you can give your opinion on that. But I mean, the back markers before the pit stops, I mean, what was that? I mean, it seemed like they did not show any blue flags, or the back markers did not go out of the way. But I mean, like, both Ferraris lost, like, I don't know, 5-6 seconds or something. I mean, it was unbelievable to see that.
Yeah, I think it's a big hot topic of debate, all this blue flags. I mean, some people think they should be stricter on the blue flags, and other people think that they should be abolished completely and go back to how it used to be, where you actually had to overtake the it'd be absolute carnage, and we'd be robbed of the blue flag comments from Vettel. I mean, that'd be a shame. But yeah, I mean, I think Monaco of all places, it's so difficult to get out of the way of other cars, and you want to make sure you're doing it in the safest way possible, without losing time to the guys that you're battling. So yeah, the Ferraris did lose a bit of time, but let's see. So Verstappen, yeah, came in on lap 33 and Bottas responded immediately, which at the time seemed like a good decision. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, and not the first time either, we've seen it this year, the overcut, as it's called, worked perfectly. Vettel was in clean air, no longer behind Raikkonen, and was able to put in, like you said, some really, really quick laps. And not only Vettel, Ricciardo too, who was behind Verstappen and Bottas, the two of them were setting really, really quick laps. I think Ricciardo was even catching Vettel a little bit. And then, yeah, they were the big, the two drivers that really benefited from all of that. And, you know, at the time, I guess it did seem like the right decision, but in hindsight, of course, the overcut was clearly the better option. And, you know, when Pirelli said that these ultra soft tires could actually go the whole distance, perhaps the team should have maybe considered that, and the fact that the people that would stay out had much more pace. But Vettel and Ricciardo stayed out and managed to jump the people they were battling, and I guess the main talking point was how Vettel was in the lead of the race, and then that sparked so much conspiracy about, was it Ferrari team orders? So what do you think on that, do you think it was team orders, or do you think Vettel had just the quicker car?
I think we even chatted about it. I think I sent you a message like, would you swap them around or something? And I mean, you could think about it. I mean, it's kind of logical. I mean, Raikkonen was like over 50 points behind Vettel before the race. But looking at the strategy, I mean, if they really wanted Vettel to overtake Kimi, It was a rather close call, and there were so many circumstances playing into that. I don't really think all of that could have been planned. So, apart from that, I actually don't think it was planned at all. And anyway, Vettel was the quicker guy, I would say. I mean, had he stayed out, or as he did, I mean, he was so much quicker. I mean, I think the last lap of Kimi on the Ultrasoft was like a 17.1 or a high 16, and then boom, Vettel goes like 15.5, 15.2, like much, much quicker. And also you could see him follow Kimi very closely, which is with those high downforce cars, it's rather difficult, which would suggest that he had much more pace. And thinking they had put the strategy the other way around, like Vettel had pitted a lap earlier, maybe with the pace Vettel had, he could have gotten past Raikkonen that way. Who knows? I mean, in my opinion, Vettel was just quicker and it was not really planned. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree. And I think it's important to remember that Raikkonen actually hit traffic as well. He came up to some backmarkers, which probably lost him some time. But again, like we said, with the Verstappen, Bottas and Ricciardo incident, Ricciardo benefited much like Vettel did. He jumped the people he was behind. So, you know, I don't think Verstappen and Ricciardo have a number one and number two status in Red Bull. Yeah. I don't think there's any team order there. I think once both drivers were in clean air, they were just able to push harder. And I think Vettel, I mean, I just think he's a quicker driver than Raikkonen overall.
And especially in the last race.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that Raikkonen's a slow driver. I mean, he got pole around F1's most difficult circuit. But I think when it matters, Vettel just has that extra edge. And he proved that, I think, on Sunday to take his third victory of the season. But I think I felt pretty bad for Raikkonen. I mean, I know he's pretty much expressionless when he's happy and when he's sad, but but on the podium you could clearly see just how devastated he was to lose that race. And I couldn't help feel a bit sorry for him, but for the Tifosi, I'm sure they're really happy to get there. Yeah, imagine their first 1-2 since 2010.
Yeah, when was the last 1-2? Was it Hockenheim?
I think so, yeah, with Alonso and Massa. And that team order has definitely played a role that day.
Coincident?
Yeah, the conspiracy theorists will be having a go with that one. But I don't think it was team order on yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, even Christian Horner and Toto Wolff, and I mean, those two, they know what went on in the race, and they know the strategy of the different teams. That both said it wasn't a team order. It was just a try to get Kimi to get him out in the best possible position, and did not work.
Yeah, and I think, you know, F1's gonna, well, the teams will certainly learn something from this, especially on the tracks that have low degradation like Monaco. I mean, we probably won't see a track again throughout the rest of the season that has quite as low degradation as Monaco. But I mean, we've seen it before with the overcut. We've seen it in Australia. Of course, Hamilton was held up in traffic in that race, but I think teams will learn from this, and we could see differing strategies coming in the next few races. We'll have to wait and see, but I think, like I said, I don't think there was any team orders at play, and I think Vettel just won the race fair and square.
Yeah, and after that, things started to happen somehow. I think the first thing that happened was the camera cut to the tunnel, and we just saw a Sauber leaning towards the barrier. It was quite an unusual sight there, but first of all, you ask yourself, is the driver okay? And again, it was Pascal Wehrlein who had already rolled a car in the race of champion, and so the question was, why him again?
Yeah, just a case of wrong place, wrong time, I think. And yeah, it was pretty scary just seeing the camera pan across and a car tipped over on its side, something you never really want to see. And for ages, I was kind of just sitting there wondering who it was. But then it did. And then when I realized it was Wehrlein, I was like, wow, again, really? And yeah, I think he was more shaken mentally than physically from the incident, because I mean, it must be pretty terrifying to get flipped over I know he didn't get flipped over the whole way, but he got a face full of barrier, which is pretty scary.
Yeah, he actually told the media it was scary for him because the brakes started smoking. There was a lot of smoke coming into the cockpit, and he just wasn't able to get out of the car.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you could see when he hopped out, he was sort of tentative getting down onto the ground and stuff. So yeah, he'll have a scan this week to see what the deal is. If he's aggravated his injury that he got at the Race of Champions, which of course put him out of the first two rounds, and he was replaced by Antonio Giovinazzi. Wehrlein, I think, has done exceptionally well since he's come back, and it would be a shame to see him drop out once again with injury. But I mean, we'll have to wait and see. It's a bit early to speculate that yet, but he will be having a scan this week. And yeah, how did you see that incident? Of course, it was Jenson Button, if we hadn't said already, if you don't know already, it was Jenson Button on his return who flipped him over. So what do you think? Do you think it was a racing incident? Or
I think there are three different views you could take. First of all, you could say that's normally not a place where you would overtake, and Jenson was a bit desperate, of course, following the Sauber for like the whole race, not getting by, and so yeah, maybe it was Jenson's mistake. But then you got the other view who could say, well, Jenson was nearly halfway alongside or something, or he was alongside, whatever. And yeah, Wehrlein should just not have turned in and let Button the space. That's also a view you could take. And then there's the one, as you mentioned, the racing incident. And I think with the interpretation of the 2017 rules and or like the steward behavior, I would have gone with the racing incident. And I don't really think that the 3-place grid penalty for Button was that necessary, especially as he will probably not serve it at all. So yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I wonder actually if he makes a return in 2018, if that'll be applied or not. I don't know, but yeah, I don't think it was Wehrlein's fault at all, because I think, you know, he had to make the corner, he had to actually turn for the corner. I mean, yeah, I think the 3-place penalty was, yeah, kind of unnecessary, because I mean, Jenson's not really going to be there to serve it, or we don't think he will be anyway. I believe it is actually just one race, it sort of lasts, so. But, I mean, I think Wehrlein was an innocent victim, and I'm sort of 50-50 on whether it was a racing incident or whether Button was at fault. But, I mean, like I've already said so far this season, when penalties have been handed out and I've been unsure, the stewards have all the access, they have all the angles, they have everything, they know the best knowledge, and if they deem it as Jensen's fault, then, you know, maybe it was his fault.
Yeah, and maybe Wehrlein actually did not see Button, because actually Button said it's so difficult to see out of those 2017 cars, the mirrors. And yeah, maybe that it was just a case of that. I mean, we saw it with Van Doorn in Barcelona, who just, yeah, he did not check his mirrors and crashed into Massa.
Yeah, and actually, maybe it's something to do, you know, these new cars are much, much wider than what they have been in years gone by. And this was Jensen's first outing in this car. And I know he's an experienced guy, but when it comes to the 2017 regulations, he's a complete rookie, and perhaps maybe it was his mistake that he misjudged the width of the cars, trying to get two of them into the one corner. Maybe not. Maybe he's, you know, that experienced that he can adjust for that. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe at the end of the day, the stewards deemed him at fault, and well, I mean, he won't be there to serve a penalty, but I think after that crash, we all just wish Pascal Wehrlein the best and hope he doesn't have any prolonged injuries.
Definitely, and yeah, after that we had a safety car, and oddly enough, Marcus Ericsson crash his car while trying to unlap himself. Very, very, very strange. But yeah, it was clear to see he turned in and absolutely no bite from the front of the car. And I mean, that really shows how temperature sensitive those tires are. I mean, like, I guess those tires were not stone cold, you know. I guess he was weaving around a little bit and getting a bit of temperature in, but he turned in, there was just absolutely no grip, you know. And just imagine, like, being 2 or 3 degrees off the optimal window could definitely cost you half a second on a lap if the difference is so big. So yeah, really, really temperature sensitive those 2017 tires, it seems. And not too much going on, or am I missing something? Anything else that happened before the finish line there?
Yeah, of course, we had on the safety car restart, there was two more incidents. There was one between Perez and Kvyat. In my opinion, it was solely Perez's fault. He just took a dive bomb in a pretty tight corner, and yeah, felt a bit sorry for Kvyat because he had driven a pretty good race up to that point. I think he's had a lot of bad luck in the last few events. I think he was screwed over by Van Dorn's crash as well in Q2, I believe. Unfortunate for him that he had to retire. And of course Perez had kind of a crazy race, because at the start of the race, I think he pitted on lap 17 for a new front wing, because the front wing was damaged and he was well outside the points, and it looked like his streak would end, and then he found himself inside the points again, and yeah, he blew it then with that overtake. And I think that's like his first race in, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 races that he hasn't finished inside the points, which is a fantastic scoring record. But yeah, quite a uncharacteristic mistake from him. Do you have anything else to say on that incident?
Oh, I totally agree. I agree with you. I mean, I mean, Checo said it himself. You've got so few places to try and overtake, and he just saw the gap and went for it. And I mean, it's understandable. It was really desperate, and yeah, it was his mistake. I think he even admitted it, that it was kind of his mistake. So yeah.
Yeah, and when you're in Monaco, when you're going for an overtake, you can't go for a half committed overtake. You've got to go for it completely. And unfortunately for him, it didn't come off.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for Jules Bianchi. I think he overtook somebody in Raskas in 2014.
Yeah, it was so, a catering. Yeah. Good memories there. For them.
Yeah, but other than that, Vettel finished the race in P1, Raikkonen P2, Daniel Ricciardo, of course, with that strategy, P3. And again, we had one not-so-happy person on the podium, Kimi, this year. It was Daniel, of course, last year. So, yeah, bit of a trend going on there.
Yeah. I think, actually, we need to mention Van Doorn, who, of course, crashed out after the safety car restart, and a big shame for him, because I think he was in the points at that stage, I think.
Yeah, P10, I think.
Yeah, so McLaren could have grabbed some points, but I think it was actually Perez as well. Perez went to overtake him. Perez wasn't in the wrong at that point, but Perez overtook him, and he just went into the barriers, but there was no contact made. But
just not enough space for two cars.
Yeah, exactly, and that was unfortunate for him and for McLaren.
All right, so let's go on to Driver of the Weekend. Driver of the Weekend. We discuss which driver showed the best performances in practice, quali, and race. All right, Driver of the Weekend. So, Fogel, have you thought about a driver of the weekend?
Yeah, I have put a lot of, well, actually this week I didn't put a lot of thought into it. It was fairly simple for me this week. I mean, the one driver that really stood out for me was Carlos Sainz. I don't know if that's who you went for.
No.
Okay, that's fine. So I can give my full description without worrying about stealing yours. Yeah. So yeah, I think Sainz did a fantastic job. I mean, both in qualifying and the race. I think he qualified. I think he qualified sixth, and he finished. Where did he finish? He might have finished sixth, maybe. I don't know. He finished high in the points anyway. And
yeah, he finished. He finished sixth ahead of Hamilton in seven.
Yeah, he did. Great effort by him, once again showing that he's up there with the top in the field. I think in terms of ability, and I really believe he's putting himself in contention for a front running seat for next year. If Ferrari want to go that way, I mean, I don't think Mercedes will open up that option. I think they're pretty satisfied with Bottas for next year. Sainz, I think he's done an amazing job so far, not only this season but in his career. Back with when he was paired with Max Verstappen, they were pretty even, and now he's outperforming Kvyat pretty well. And another really, really strong weekend around a very difficult circuit, and yeah, just flawless really, and probably one of his best weekends in his career, except perhaps I think was it last year in Spain where he got P6 as well. So yeah, he would be my driver of the weekend. What about you?
Yeah, and actually you already on Friday, no, not Friday, but Thursday, I think we already saw that Toro Rosso is really on the pace, like on the super soft tires, on the slower tires, they showed great pace. So I already thought that there might be something in it for them, and I can totally understand it. I mean, really good performance for him, and would also be a good choice, but I just had not thought about him to be honest. I just thought, you know, Daniel Ricciardo, he had a pretty good strategy, of course, but also he made it work. So, yeah, good overcut, good laps after the two guys pitted, and as you said, he even closed the gap to Vettel possibly. So yeah, for me it was a really, really good race from him. Qualifying, well, he got a little bit screwed by the positioning on the outlap. So considering that, it wasn't that bad of a lap, although he could have been better in terms of, or that the team could have sent him out in a better position. So yeah, I would go for Daniel Ricciardo, but Carlos Sainz is also a very good option, I would say.
Yeah, I think both drivers did a great job, and both within the Red Bull program. So
actually, I missed the opportunity. I could have said driver of the weekend. Well, it was Takuma Sato.
Yeah, we should. Do you want to move on to that race? Because there's going to be a lot of talking points from there, I think.
You think so? Well, I mean, we already had the team radio from Fernando Alonso before the start of the race, which was hilarious. Well, at least the comments from Button were hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, the irony in
take care of my car.
I'm sure he did his best to take care, but yeah, he got damage onto it, and not the race he wanted. And also, I just remember, I think in the last episode we forgot to do our podium prediction, so we have no way of of saying that we were wrong this week. But I think
I would have picked Vettel and Kimi for one and two, but
yeah, it's easy to say that now. I think in next week we'll be back with that prediction again.
So yeah, Indy 500. First time I watched an oval race. First time I watched an IndyCar race, and yeah, I tuned in at 6 o'clock, and I thought, like, what is going on there? It's just military parade and like whatever and the religious things, and I was like, shouldn't there be a motor race on?
Yeah, I guess the American way of doing things is very different to the European way. I mean, the huge build up to the race. I think, like, the ceremony and stuff starts 2 or 3 hours before the actual race, and but I mean, it's all to build up the atmosphere, and I'm sure if you were over there watching the race live, it would be an incredible atmosphere. And yeah, I mean, I was pretty excited to start the race to see how it would go, and was really looking forward to the race.
Yeah, so of course Fernando Alonso starting P5, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, P5, good starting position. And yeah, I have to be honest, I only watched it because of Alonso, and I only focused on him, you know, like, thank God he had an orange car. You could easily spot him. So I was, every time they came around, I was just like, oh, where's Alonso? What is he doing?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was interesting to watch, you know. And I think the first thing that really was really exciting was that huge crash from, who was Scott Dixon, right?
Scott Dixon and Jay Howard, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was huge, like a car flying through the air at like 200 miles per hour, and like nearly half of the car was destroyed. I was really amazed that he just was able to get out of the car.
Yeah, I mean, it's a brutal reminder of what, if we needed one after Sebastian Bourdais' crash in qualifying, it's a brutal reminder of what happens when you get it wrong at the Indy 500. I mean, the lowest when they're on the oval, the lowest speeds they'd be going would be 220 miles per hour at the lowest.
Actually, how much is that in kilometers per hour?
I mean, you're talking, I mean, well, 300 and...
Let me ask Google. Maybe Google knows that. 220, it's like 354. So basically that's a top speed an F1 car goes in Monza, and they're doing that in the corners, right? All right. So Fergal seems to be gone somehow. As it was an indie, let's have a break. Let's have an advertisement break. Well, not with us, but we'll be right back with you. So we are back from the ad break, and yeah, we fixed Fergal's microphone somehow. Yeah, microphone powered by Honda, whatever. And yeah, we were just talking about the huge crash of Scott Dixon, of course. Really bad crash going on there. And yeah, after that, yeah, a lot of overtaking going on. I have to be honest with you, I'm not into oval racing, and in the end I will probably not watch an oval race again unless Alonso does it again, probably. So yeah, maybe you're more qualified to talk about what went on before the last few laps, of course.
Yeah, well, it's all really a game of strategy and where you are on track. And I mean, I think you saw in the first, 100, 150 laps, it's all polite racing. And you if you're being overtaken, you let the car go by. You don't try and defend heavily because it's going to hurt you. And yeah, it was, I thought it was great. I mean, I think I've already said this to you. I think, in my opinion, the Indy 500 is the greatest motor race in the world. Last year was the first time I ever watched it, like, the whole way through, and I don't think this year's race was as good as last year's, because last year's ending was just phenomenal with Alex Rossi winning it when he basically had no fuel left. But yeah, I mean, it was fairly standard the whole way through. A lot of incidents, a lot of yellow, a lot of caution periods. There was bits that was debris on track, and then yeah, that huge crash with Dixon and Howard was very scary. And Castro Neves, I think it was driving underneath the flying car of Dixon, which was
there's some really cool pictures on Twitter, like it was really close.
Yeah, it was unbelievably close, but thankfully everyone, miraculously everyone's okay from that incident. But yeah, they were out, and there was a big cleanup, and then there was a few caution periods, and then Connor Daly crashed out, and he took someone with him. Who did he take? I can't remember who he took with him. And then yeah, it was all pretty standard. I mean, Alonso was actually leading the race at one point. And he was doing really well for a rookie there. Someone that's never even, well, up to the start of the event, which was like 2 weeks ago, had never driven an Indy car before. So I think he did a great job. And the last 30 laps or so, and Max Chilton, out of nowhere, kind of just emerged in the lead and was right in contention for the win. And then we seen it. We seen him pulling over to the side, and just, I think everybody's hearts just sunk. I mean, I'm the most unbiased motorsport fan out there, but I'm not going to lie, I really wanted to see Alonso win that race.
Yeah, me too. I think a lot of people, I think probably like 80% of the F1 paddock wanted Alonso to win that race. And I think like in those hours, all F1 fans were Alonso fans, I would presume. But seeing the camera on the main straight, seeing the field, and then just that one orange car pulling to the right, it was so heartbreaking to see that. And again, Alonso delivering his best, giving all he's got, and then Honda lets him down. I mean, you couldn't make that stuff up.
No, you really couldn't. And I think for what it's worth, it mightn't be worth much to Alonso because he wanted to win, but I think it was good to see just how well he was received and how well his drive was praised. I tweeted out yesterday, don't remember Alonso for the results, remember, you know, what he did in that month and how he's remembered and what impact he had over in the US. And I think he will be remembered for that, and there's no doubt he's already confirmed that he'll be back next year, maybe not, but he'll definitely be back in the future because he wants to win the Triple Crown, which means he has to win this race. So yeah, he'll give it another go, and when that is, I'm not too sure, but I think he's if he can show this year that he can contend for the victory, then there's no doubt that he'll be that he'll eventually be able to win it, and I think he will win it. But unfortunately this year was not his year.
Yeah, if he goes back next year, I'll definitely watch it, I guess. something to look forward next year. Also something to look forward is our next recording, of course. And next time, next week, we'll be discussing the Montreal, the Canadian GP. And of course, then it's back to business for Fernando in his... normal environment with his Honda engine that is not quite as fast as the one in his IndyCar. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting episode as well. But until then, really thank you very much for listening to this episode. Two great races, Monaco and Indy, and I hope we can discuss many more great races from the F1 season this year. So goodbye.
Goodbye.